Good morning. We're recording this sermon in the youth room at the church, and I thought that one way of introducing the sermon today would be to tell the Easter story to you in a unique way. The Gospels tell us that before the world existed, there was Christ with God, and he came in to the world, but the world would not accept him. The world rejected him. And they took him, they arrested him, they crucified and buried him in a tomb. And they put him in the tomb and said, "That will take care of him. Now we are done with him." But after 3 days, they went to look at the body in the tomb, and they saw that it was rolled back. The stone had been rolled away. And people immediately thought that Jesus had been taken someplace else. But he wasn't in the tomb, and he wasn't someplace else. Where was he? He was back in the world. And that's the good news that we proclaim on Easter and the weeks following Easter, is that Jesus is back in the world with you and me. And we get to tell that story to others. Amen? Today's sermon text is one of my favorites in the entire New Testament, and it tells the story of Jesus meeting his friends on the road on that first Easter morning. The Scottish folks have a saying about texts such as this, these wonderful stories, that this is a story that is better felt than telt. And so this morning I just want to have a conversation with you. Certainly this is a text that lends itself to proclamation, and it's easy for me to imagine what it would be like to preach this sermon before a full sanctuary here at Bellingham Covenant. But that's not possible. And so this morning I would rather have this be a more conversational tone, a more narrative tone, a telling a story, and invite you to come in to this story. I like what it says in Luke 23, in verses 11 and 12. It says, "But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb, and bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened." I like these verses because it underscores the reality for all of us, the truth that we'll need to see and to hear more from Jesus than just words from other people. We need to experience him ourselves. And so the story that we have today is of two friends, two followers of Jesus. We're not sure who these disciples are. It could have been two disciples, two men. It could be a man and a wife, a couple that were walking home for the evening. But along the way, they are depressed, discouraged, and despairing about their friend, Jesus, who had been crucified and dead and buried, and now for many of them, unsure of where his whereabouts were. The text says, "Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him." That is just a significant phrase. They were kept from recognizing him. That speaks to an act of God. They were prevented from seeing Jesus and recognizing him immediately. Sometimes, in God's grace, he just doesn't tell us everything or show us everything all at once. He gives us time. time for the story to unfold, time for the good news to take root in our own life. Sometimes we have to wait to receive the riches and the rewards that the Lord has for us. I think about people at this season in our nation and in our world that are having to wait and can't see everything all at once. Those of you who have experienced extreme grief know that at the time you can't hardly feel anything else but the weight and the emotion of that grief. And God in His grace to us gives us time to feel it and to wait until the appropriate time comes. Sometimes, whether named or unnamed, either recognized or unrecognized, God is always present to us. Waiting for us is a work as well as a grace. And then Jesus invites them to share their feelings. He asks them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" And they stood still, their faces downcast, and one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there in these days?" The language here is they were arrested. They stood still. They were stopped in their tracks. And they had a sad and gloomy countenance, a sullen look to themselves. And Jesus says, "What things?" Jesus invites them to explore both their experiences as well as their expectations. Think about that for yourself. If Jesus were to come and stand among you now, or to sit with you in a room like this, and to ask you, "What are you talking about? What are you thinking about? What things?" I think about our high school youth, for example, here in the youth room. Their school year has been taken away from them. The ability to meet frequently with each other is gone. Social distancing has limited social interaction. While you can still do it electronically and from a distance, it just isn't the same as being together. I have heard this past week from the staff here at the church about how important community is to this congregation and has been for a number of years. That community has been disrupted, and you're having to stay at a distance from each other. So if Jesus came up to you and said, "What are you talking about?" what would you say? I remember a little quiz, a question that I saw on the television, and it was, what word or phrase stirs fear in the hearts of 95% of people? And you know what I thought of immediately? Sorry to say this. Your license and registration, please. But that wasn't the answer. The answer was 95% of us are afraid when someone says to us, "We need to talk." In this case, when Jesus was inviting them to talk, it was an invitation of grace to tell their story. Not so much that Jesus needed to hear their story, but they needed to tell Him what they were experiencing and what they were feeling. Could that be true for you, that in this moment you need to talk? You need to say something to someone, anyone? You too need to go for a walk with Jesus and to tell Him both what you are experiencing as well as what your expectations are for the future. When Jesus says we need to talk, it is an invitation to explore what it is that we are going through at this time. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied, "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. So Jesus meets us on the road, but he also meets us in the Word. Here's what Jesus said to them. How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Jesus tells them the rest of the story. Whereas for these two companions on the road, their understanding of Jesus was that he was a good teacher and a good prophet, but he certainly wasn't risen from the dead at this point. They were able to point to what he had done up to the point of his death, but they weren't able to go beyond that. Jesus, on the other hand, tells them the rest of the story. He says, why are you so slow of heart? In the Message, Eugene Peterson says, why are you so dull? Another translation would say, why are you so thick-headed? Now, that doesn't seem like a good way to start a conversation, but they were ready to receive from Jesus the rest of the story and the truth. So what else do you think he might have said to them? What passages from the Old Testament might he have made reference to? Do you think he would have talked about Psalm 22, portions of which he prayed and exclaimed from the cross on that Good Friday afternoon, my God, why have you forsaken me? Do you think that he might have made reference to Isaiah 53, where the passage speaks to the suffering servant and being taking on the pain of and the suffering of others, and that by his stripes we are healed? But Jesus also in his grace waits for the invitation for us to say, tell us more. Look what the text said. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going farther, but they urged him strongly, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over. So he went to stay with them. The grace allows and waits for our invitation. For some of you, you have kept Jesus at a distance. And hopefully in this text, you see that warm and welcoming presence of Jesus, where he comes to us and says he wants to talk with us, to spend time with us, but he's waiting for our invitation to him. I'd like to spend more time with you. Why don't you come home? Why don't you talk with us more? It's late in the day, which is not just a metaphor or a figure of speech. For some folks, this time can feel like it is late in the day. Jesus, won't you come home with us and talk? So Jesus meets us on the road. Jesus meets us in the Word. And finally, Jesus meets us at the table. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? In the breaking of the bread, the disciples recognized Jesus. those who were kept from recognizing Jesus on the road recognized him in the breaking of the bread. And in the breaking of the bread, they remembered a time just a few days earlier when Jesus met them at the table. I think it's interesting that those who were slow of heart and were thick-headed and dull now remembered in this moment that their hearts were burning. And that word burning, as it's used elsewhere in the New Testament, means an uncontrollable longing to speak or to pray, and it's usually in a situation of distress. William Barclay, in one of his translations, says, "Our hearts, their hearts, were strangely warmed." And I like what Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of this verse is in the Message. "Back and forth they talked. Didn't we feel on fire as he conversed with us on the road, as he opened up the scriptures to us?" Lloyd Ogilvie, the former chaplain for the United States Senate, notes that that word heart, as it appears in this verse, is singular, which means they were of one heart. They're of one heart, and their hearts were strangely warmed. Brothers and sisters, as I think about Bellingham Covenant Church, this is what stands out for me. You folks truly are of one heart. And today is that Sunday in the month when we celebrate prayers of healing. And we can only imagine what this Sunday would look like if, in fact, we were able to be together. Of those of you that would come forward, and you would be surrounded by your friends, by your sisters and brothers, some who are not even sure what it is that your need would be and what you were praying for, but you would know that they were there for you and they would be with you. It isn't just limited to adults. I think about the youth group and others in this church, the small groups that exist in this church that are trying to stay in contact with one another through the digital mystery of Zoom and through social media. Nothing can replicate or replace the presence of our brothers and sisters. And on this day, may you experience with them as they come to your mind that you, in fact, are of one heart with them. The good news is, for each one of us, Jesus meets us on the road and says, "What are you talking about? We need to talk." And when in our own narrow way of understanding the scriptures and trying to make sense of life, Jesus comes to us and invites us to hear the rest of the story and to experience his word of grace as he shares with us the promise of what it means to be transformed and to experience new life in him. And then he meets us at the table, and we recognize that our hearts were strangely warmed, that they were burning within us. And weren't we of one mind and of one heart when we were at the table? And then Jesus is gone. And the text says, they went back to Jerusalem. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. And there they found the 11 and those with them assembled together. And they were saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way, and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Do you see that word again? Recognized. On the road, in the trauma and the grief and the sense of loss, they were kept from recognizing him. And then at the table, they recognized him. And now they return to their closest friends and share the good news. "We recognized him. We saw him." Now that's an Easter message for all of us at this time. For us, whenever we can, with our sisters and brothers to tell the story of how Jesus is meeting us along the road. It is now our invitation to go back. To go back those 7 miles that we have walked away from, and to go back to those that we need to tell the good news to. And so may you be blessed this day with healing prayers, and may you offer healing prayers for your sisters and brothers in this church that we have experienced. We are, in spite of the distance, we are of one heart on the road, in the Word, and at the table. Amen.